Like listening to podcasts just like this one from the team at Which? Well, we've got some good news. All our podcasts are now available to listen to on YouTube and YouTube Music. So whether you like listening to Get Answers, Which Shorts, or Which Money, all episodes can now be listened to directly on YouTube or through the YouTube Music app. To find them, just search for the podcast you'd like to listen to. YouTube's additional functionality also means that you can now read along with subtitles as you listen. Don't panic though, all Which podcasts are still available to listen to elsewhere too. So wherever you listen, we'll see you soon.
When life gives you questions, Which? Get answers.
Welcome to the Which Money Podcast, your weekly hit of money news and personal finance hacks to help make you better off. I'm your host, Rob Lily Jones, Infolucia Ariano, and here's what's coming up this week.
When you look at some of the figures here, someone with a salary of £30,000 now is going to be looking at a saving of about £350 a year. That's not nothing, but it's also not necessarily going to be life-altering in the way that you're prepared to go and spend in the economy.
Big headlines, alcohol duty and fuel duty are frozen, as in the taxes on those won't be increasing. This is actually quite common. It's happened in the last few budgets, but it does make a real difference.
This week, we've assembled earlier than usual to bring you coverage of today's spring budget from the Chancellor, Jeremy Hunt. He took to his feet shortly after 12:30 p.m. on Wednesday afternoon, and we'll break down exactly what he had to say and what it means for you throughout the course of today's show. To start us off, though, here's how Mr. Hunt ended his speech in the House.
It is to unleash people power that we today put this country back on the path to lower taxes. A plan to grow the economy versus no plan. A plan for better public services versus no plan. Plan to make work pay versus no plan. Growth up, jobs up, taxes down. I commend this statement to the House.
And here's some of the response from the Leader of the Opposition, Sakir Starmer.
Madam Deputy Speaker, people have been living through this nonsense for 14 years. Yeah. They know the thresholds are still frozen, dragging more and more people into higher taxes. Yeah. They know that a Tory stealth tax is coming their way in the shape of their next council tax bill.
Yeah, absolutely.
The levelling up secretary has told not just this House, but every House in the country he's coming for their council tax. Yeah. Give with one hand, give in the other.
Yeah. So then we heard both sides of the coin there, and today we'll be unpicking the biggest announcements and what they could mean for you and your money. Covering plenty of advice as we go. Sat alongside me is a podcast regular here on the Which Money podcast, the deputy editor of Which Money, Sam Richardson. Hello, Sam.
Hi, Rob.
And also with us is Sophie Lund-Yates, lead equity analyst from financial investment platform Hargreaves Lansdown.
Hi, Rob. Great to be here.
Well, it's brilliant to have you both on the show today. So then, let's start. If we can start with a bit of context, I suppose, the backdrop to today's announcement. How is the economy looking now and how have things changed since the autumn statement back in November? Sophie, do you want to get us up to speed on this one?
Sure, absolutely. So as a lot of people listening will definitely resonate with, the media loves to talk about this as well. It's all about the UK economy, and I'm going to go with a lack of growth. So obviously there's a lot of chatter about the technical recession, how long that's going to persist, how long until the UK economy is going to be firing on all cylinders, because that helps everybody really. Now, what I would say is, as much as I do actually think, and I'm going to say something positive, which we don't hear very often at the moment, I do think that actually the worst of economic pain is behind us, but that does not automatically translate to high octane growth. So that is something to keep in mind. Things are actually, I think, going to remain quite sluggish for quite some time. Now, the big thing on the to-do list for this budget, along with the more granular things that we'll go into, I'm sure, later on, they didn't want to spook the market, because I'm not going to talk too much about lettuces and Liz Truss here.
But they did not want a repeat of that. And that means treading a really fine line between saying, look, we are committed to getting things moving again economically, but it needs to be done in a measured way to stop everyone from freaking out, frankly.
Okay, so that is the context to which this budget is set within. With all that in mind then, it'd be good to hear both of your reactions to what was announced. Before we go into detail, Sam, you go first, then Sophie, we'll get your thoughts. Sam, you were listening along, watching with me in the Witch office, so what were your initial reactions to what we heard?
Yeah, so I thought there were some small important steps, but it's difficult to ignore that wider context of frozen tax rates and rising prices in terms of what this will actually mean for people. The second national insurance cut will put money back in people's pockets. That's really positive. Though the lowest earners will still lose out, as will pensioners, because they don't pay national insurance, but they do pay income tax. The child benefit changes will make a real big difference to parents earning between £50,000 and £80,000 per year. Those are salaries we used to think were really quite high, but today don't stretch as far as they did. And the freeze on fuel duty, while fairly dull, will help a lot of people, especially people who need to use their car for work. In comparison to the British ISA announcement, which probably won't help that many people, even if it's intriguing to kind of money obsessives like us.
Some spoilers there, Sam, about what we're going to go into today on the podcast. Sophie, what about you?
So similar to Sam, really, a lot of quite interesting developments. But arguably, I do think that some areas could have gone a little bit further. In particular, so childcare reform and costs in that area of things, absolutely 100% welcomed. But could we be going a little bit further to help the rest of the workforce get back to work on a full-time basis and with a lot more ease? Absolutely, I personally think so. And also just a little bit more context really on that national insurance cut. So when you look at some of the figures here, as you were just alluding to there, so someone with a salary of £30,000 now is going to be looking at a saving of about £350 a year. That's not nothing, but it's also not necessarily going to be life-altering in the way that you're prepared to go and spend in the economy. Now, that's not an accident. The government has got to walk this tightrope of not putting too much money back in people's pockets, because that's going to help fuel inflation, which is obviously very problematic. I think the other interesting announcement from that perspective as well was the alcohol duty freeze. Now, that is going to help pubs in quite a big way. But again, the bigger question is when people are going to be feeling flush enough to start frequenting pubs in a big way once more. I mean, my family own a pub. It's really, really difficult at the moment. And actually, yes, okay, that's a nice to have for the businesses at the moment, but it's not going to go far enough to completely change the picture for what is a really challenging time for hospitality at the moment. So I think another interesting point there.
That is something that we will dive into a bit deeper later on. Let's get into something now, though, that you've both already mentioned. That is national insurance, probably one of the main headlines from the budget. There's been another cut to national insurance. So, Sam, what is happening? What could it mean for people listening? I know Sophie's touched on some of it there.
Yeah, so I'll do my best to keep this jargon free. So from April, if you're an employee, you'll pay national insurance at a rate of 8% rather than 10% of your salary between £12,570 per year and £50,270 per year. So bottom line is you'll get more money in your pay packet after tax. So Jeremy Hunt says this will save the average employee £450 a year, because it very much depends. If you earn under £20,000, it's going to be a real hit. And above £50,270, you only pay a rate of 2% anyway, which isn't changing. For self-employed people, they're also getting a cut. The Class 4 rate that they pay is going down from 8% to 6%, which Jeremy Hunt says will save them £350 per year. These savings, as I said, they won't be the same for everyone, and they don't take into account frozen income tax rates, which I think, Sophie, you can talk to later when we really get in the weeds.
Now, Sam, if we move on to childcare, something that is, of course, vitally important for so many of our listeners, to quote the Chancellor, he said he wanted to set out plans to end the unfairness. So how did he say he plans to do that?
Yeah, so he is going to change the child benefit charge taper, which to unpack that a little bit. So you get child benefit to really help with those huge financial costs of children, but above £50,000 per year, you effectively have to start paying it back to the government. It's a very strange arrangement. You do it through your self-assessment tax return. But what it means is that when you get to £60,000, you're paying back all of that child benefit charge. The problem is, because it's just based on one partner's income, if your other partner has a very low income, it can mean that you're effectively paying like a huge amount of your salary back once you include that child benefit charge. It's very difficult as well for single parents who may be earning more than £50,000, but as I'm sure any parent would tell me, that's not much when it comes to kids. So what Jeremy Hunt wants to do is hugely increase the threshold at which you have to start paying back child benefit. So he's going to raise the start of this charge to £60,000. So if you or your partner is earning more than that, then you'll have to start paying it back. And you won't have to pay all of your child benefit back until you're earning more than £80,000, which is a huge increase from the current £60,000 kind of absolute cutoff. He also says that they want to look at changing it from an individual's income, so either you or your partner earns above a certain amount, to an overall household's income, which should make things fairer, but will require quite a lot of changes in the tax system.
So what's the effect then? You've mentioned some of the figures involved, but what might that actually mean?
Yeah, so it's hoped it will take 160,000 families out of paying this child benefit charge altogether, and 500,000 families with children will save an estimated £1,300 next year.
Quite an impact potentially on quite a lot of families.
A huge impact, though. You know, it's important to mention here, being a parent is enormously expensive. Childcare is enormously expensive. There are so many other costs we need to factor in before we can say that parents are the winners of this budget in any way. It's still extremely tough being one. And there's other ways, I'm sure we'll hear from Sophie, that the government could have helped that they haven't helped parents.
Yeah, as you say, we might get to that later on. Sophie, Sam promised us earlier that you would get us into the weeds of income tax.
Oh, yeah.
Ultimately, there were no changes to income tax. I think that's right. And the thresholds do remain frozen, although that doesn't necessarily mean things won't change in terms of people's take-home pay.
So going into this budget, really, there was no suggestion of an early end to the freezing of those tax thresholds, but that doesn't mean that we would have been necessarily looking for them. So these will continue to do really, I would say, untold damages to our finances and cost taxpayers far more than was originally envisaged when the freeze was introduced. Now, the freeze on income tax thresholds will keep pushing more people into paying tax on their income and more into paying higher rates of tax. And also, I think we knew that sweeping tax cuts weren't going to be coming into play for those reasons I was talking about, in terms of the government would need to find some way of paying for that without spooking everybody. Now, what we would say is, in the future, this is very much hypothetical, but if there were to be a cut to income tax in future budgets, it's really important that there'd be a transitional period of at least a year in which tax relief on savings and investment products remain at their previous level to make it easier for people to plan for, because we know this is something that consumers really struggle with, working people in general really struggle with, is the complexity of tax issues. And that can lead to kind of head in the sand syndrome, which doesn't help anybody. So I think due diligence in terms of planning and the communication of any changes as well is remains really important.
Well, it'll be fascinating to see what happens going forward. Sam, probably worth us actually touching on here before we go to the break, what thresholds actually are. What does this actually mean?
Yeah, so by frozen, we mean that these thresholds aren't increasing by inflation. And the reason it's important for thresholds to increase by inflation is that reflects the actual increase in our salaries, which reflects the increase in the cost of living. So it's effectively the government saying, even though your salary is going up, we're not going to increase, say, the tax-free amount of that salary you can keep, or the amount that you only have to pay a basic rate tax on. So essentially, they're clawing back a kind of bigger proportion than they would be if they'd kept those tax thresholds going up at the same rate our salaries are. It's very difficult to understand. And that is why they keep on using it. Frozen tax thresholds are difficult for people to get, but as Sophie said, they really do hit our wallets.
So we're going to take a quick break now, and then when we come back, we'll have more details on the frequently trailed British ISA. It's finally been announced, but what difference could it make to you? We'll have more after this.
2023 was momentous in the fight against fraud. It saw the passing of the Online Safety Act and the Financial Services and Markets Act. Both of these happening after years of exhaustive campaigning from us here at Which? But the battle against scams is far from over. Stay in the know and avoid falling victim to scammers by joining over 450,000 others who have signed up to our Which Scam Alerts. To sign up, head to which.co.uk/scamalert today.
So then, to perhaps one of the least surprising parts of today's budget, and the news of the British ISA. So we're approaching ISA season, of course, with the new financial year fast approaching. Firstly, Sam, what is this ISA and how does it differ from some of the others that are on the market?
Yeah, so I'm very excited about this because ISA is one of the most powerful tools for savers and investors to not pay tax. For any assets in ISA, you don't pay capital gains tax when you sell them. You don't pay dividends tax on the dividends you earn. If it's, you know, for cash ISAs, you don't pay interest. So this British ISA that's finally been announced is effectively an extra £5,000 ISA allowance on top of your £20,000 annual allowance, which can only be used to invest in British companies. What that actually means, I'm hoping Sophie can answer. So the government says it will consult on this new British ISA. It's not clear exactly when it will be launched, or indeed which providers will offer it. There's quite a few details yet to be confirmed.
And Sophie, I'll come to you now, because I know this is something you feel very strongly about. What difference might this make for our listeners?
So the one thing that we would say, though, is obviously those that need an extra £5,000 a year, that's not necessarily the masses. That is going to be higher net worth individuals. So this isn't a reform that's going to help absolutely everybody in this landscape. Now, one thing that they are potentially going to do, this is hypothetical at this stage, but a change we could see is that this British ISA is reserved for investment in British companies only. Now, this is not something that particularly encourages the kind of investing that we would like to see people engage with. And by that, I mean making sure that you're diversified. And all I mean by that, which is a bit jargony, it just means not having all your eggs in one basket and making sure that your investments are spread around geographic regions, different asset types, all of that, forcing people into a certain area of the globe, whether or not the intentions are correct, i.e. trying to boost investment in British companies. That's another question. You know, dictating where people invest their money geographically is not necessarily something that is going to be the most positive outcome for all investors, in my opinion.
If you want to read more about that British ISA and what it might entail, what it might mean for you, then you can do that over on the money section of our website. That's which.co.uk. Now, what about taxes on the things that we buy? So these are the things that might fall more into the category of, say, everyday spending. What was the here, Sam?
So yeah, big headlines, alcohol duty and fuel duty are frozen, as in the taxes on those won't be increasing. This is actually quite common. It's happened in the last few budgets, but it does make a real difference. Petrol's, you know, very expensive as it is. It's something that a lot of us need to get to work, need to see people. So that's a huge help for normal people. As we were saying earlier, with alcohol duty, it really matters, particularly to your local pub, which would be struggling. I will point out with alcohol duty, the price of alcohol is very expensive anyway for lots of reasons, including inflation. And the prospect of taxes not going up and is not necessarily going to get people going out maybe in the same way they were before the cost of living shot up.
So, Sam, you mentioned duty frozen, remains frozen on fuel and alcohol. So good news there. Potentially not some good news elsewhere, not as good news for other people.
Yeah, so this is a really big change. We've recently seen a lot of concern about vaping, young people vaping, which of course is a slightly different issue around rules. But there is an increasing push for vaping to be treated a little like tobacco is at the moment, so very heavily taxed. So what Jeremy Hunt said is that from October 2026, so a long way away, vaping will get a new duty on it. At the moment, it doesn't have one. And it's hoped that this will stop people from taking up vaping in the first place and, of course, raise money for the NHS, which may have to treat as yet unknown side effects of vaping. It's estimated the new duty will raise around $445 million by 2028 to 2029. However, in order not to make vaping almost as taxed as tobacco, which I mean there's no point switching, say, from cigarettes to vapes, the government in October 2026 will raise tobacco duty by 1%. As any smoker will tell you, the taxes on smoking are already huge, so it's going to make it even more expensive for people. But of course, raising money to treat the many illnesses we know come from smoking, and it's hoped that 1% increase will raise a further £170 million by 2028-29.
Not an insignificant amount of money.
Exactly.
So if we move on then, we're coming towards the end of this special budget episode here on the Which Money podcast. I'm going to give you both a chance to come in on this one. This is your chance, Sam and Sophie, to wrap up anything else that we might have missed. I know there were some things we knew would be changing before the chance listed up today. So Sophie, you're up first.
I'd be quite keen to mention something that we didn't see, and that is a reform to the lifetime ISA or LISA, depending on what you want to go with. Now, the lifetime ISA can change people's lives, really, helping them onto the property ladder and to save for the retirement that they want as well. But it's not perfect. You know, rarely these products are, but there were some tangible changes we were hoping to see, and they haven't materialised. Now, one of those changes being the 25% penalty that's currently levied for accessing money for purposes other than buying a first home or for retirement. Now, the removal of that and reducing the early access penalty down to 20%, would have meant that people don't lose any of their own savings as well. This could particularly have helped groups saving for retirement, in particular the self-employed, who quite regularly get a little bit neglected in these developments. Additionally to that, over at Hargreaves Lansdown, we really believe that the LISA could be made even more attractive if people were able to open one up until the age of 55. Now, that is not currently the case. So recent analysis from the HL Savings and Resilience Barometer, which is really prudent here, has shown that this would help 70% of the self-employed who missed out on the LISA because they were too old when it launched. And finally, not to make this sound too much like a LISA manifesto, you know, the £450,000 limit on the value of property bought with a lifetime ISA has not been reviewed since LISA's launched. Now, you know, your listeners won't need me to tell them that there has been rapid house price growth, and that means that that limit should be increased to help people, particularly in the southeast, who will struggle to find a property they can use their LISA to buy as well.
I'd flag the wider lack of attention to first-time buyers, really. It's obviously not an easy problem to solve, but people really struggle to get on the housing ladder. And on the other hand, we've got older people living in very big houses, but they find it difficult to downsize. And there's been many calls around who do we give tax cuts to? Do we tweak stamp duty again, which has been a feature in previous budgets, doesn't always have the intended effect. So I was slightly expecting to see a little more about that, especially considering there were rumours around kind of 99% mortgages that were dropped, apparently, in the lead up to the budget. So that was slightly disappointing. And I think generally with the ISAs, the British ISA actually went in the reverse direction that some people have been calling for, which is for us to simplify ISAs. There's so many types of ISAs now. We've got many pages of it on our website, which you can read to unpack these things. But there have been calls to why not just have it all in the same ISA wrapper, got the same name, and then perhaps you have particular perks for using the money in a particular way, such as buying your first home or taking out a retirement. Of course, that's not entirely popular, but there was perhaps a missed opportunity to make this very complicated area a bit more accessible for normal people who maybe don't have the time to listen to the Full Which Money podcast.
I can't imagine that would be the case for anyone. So then, to finish, it really has been a bumper episode of today's Which Money podcast. Of course, a hastily arranged podcast to react to today's budget. After everything we've heard, I'd love if both of you can share any advice or maybe takeaways for our listeners. This, of course, is likely to be the government's last budget before a general election later in the year.
Yeah, I'd say don't take the budget too seriously in terms of stick to your financial goals. Don't let, say, the British ISA completely change how you're investing, something you fought very hard about, and British companies won't necessarily be what you need in your portfolio. I'd say to people who can afford it, perhaps think about that saving you're getting from the national insurance cut, and could you put it into your savings, say the same amount of money? You can find out how much you'd save on our national insurance calculator online. Of course, a lot of people, you know, that money is very much needed, in which case perhaps think about which of your debts are the most expensive, most likely to be credit card or overdraft debt, and perhaps focus on paying those off using the extra money. But yeah, just generally stick to your intentions and goals and don't pay too much attention to the politics around this.
Yeah, absolutely. These kind of events really do serve as a reminder that government, political, macroeconomic backgrounds, they change all the time. And actually throughout that, in order to stay on track with your financial and, from my perspective, I'd say investing goals as well, it's really important to try and not pay too much attention to the noise. But looking specifically at what we've heard from the budget, just as Sam was saying, those extra pennies you're going to have in your pocket, that's between £300 to £750-ish in a year, thanks to those national insurance cuts. You know, what can you do to maybe get that money working harder for you through things like putting it in tax efficient wrappers? And then the other thing I would say is the budget has really, and our conversation here today as well, it's served as a massive reminder that the investing landscape and the product landscape, it is a little bit complex and it can feel really quite scary. You know, we're just talking about the layers of difficulty in the ISA landscape. We would definitely support more simplicity in that system, but it just serves as a reminder to go and have a look at what is out there, because there are lots of platforms that can help dispel these myths and educate yourself and just take the step to maybe do some learning. If investing and looking at those kind of products is something that's normally you've been put off by it, just give it a go and do some research and you might surprise yourself.
Well, a huge thank you to both of you for coming on the show today, reacting to the news and also helping us make sense of what's been announced. So really appreciate it. Sam, Sophie, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Well, a huge thanks again to Sam and Sophie for coming on the show today, and to you for listening to this week's episode of the Which Money podcast. If you enjoyed today's show, then please do hit subscribe to make sure you catch our new episodes as soon as they drop. And for daily money news and advice, you can find us on social media. We're at Which Money, and we're online at which.co.uk/money. And that's also where you'll be able to find more analysis of the budget from our brilliant money journalists too. And we also have our free money newsletter, which is delivered to your inbox every Monday. And if you've already signed up, then you'll have a budget special newsletter in your inbox now as well. This episode of the Which Money podcast was presented by me, Rob Lilly Jones, and written, recorded, edited, and produced by Adrian Bradley.
What is happening to supermarket prices? Do own label brands taste good? What's the best supermarket? What's the worst? How do I spend less on my weekly shop? Are there ways I can shop smarter? Should I just be growing my own veg? How do I even grow veg? Wine to pair with spag bol?
When life gives you questions, get answers at which.co.uk.